welcome to the Sleon Productions podcast, where we interview entrepreneurs, business owners, authors, or anyone that is bringing value to this world. In this episode, we have Victor Biggs. He is a real estate entrepreneur. He is the vice president of business development at Exclusively Real Estate, based in South Florida. And I know Victor through his son, which he sang at a church that I used to go to. Victor, welcome to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Santiago, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Victor Biggs, we've met before, but we can't pinpoint when that was. But tell us a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. My name is Victor Biggs, and one of the greatest things for me personally is I'm a family man. I've got an amazing wife. I've got a son that you mentioned and a daughter. I'm really, really proud of them. They're amazing people. And one of the greatest things that I've found is that you and I have reconnected, because we all connected at some point. We did some work for the community. You and my family, we were volunteers at a church that we attended. And I think we achieved some amazing things. The church had great leadership, and we were able to piggyback you, myself, my family, and add value to the community. So what I enjoy doing above everything else is helping people reach their purpose. That's my greatest passion. And it comes from, if I can quote from Zig Ziglar, that we are engineered for success, we're designed for accomplishment, and we are endowed with the seeds of greatness. So my greatest passion in life, Santiago, is helping people find and live out their purpose in life.
Victor, that's great. So tell us, let's go back in time and tell us, how did you start? How did you become an entrepreneur?
You know, it's a really, really good question. When I was in my early 20s, when most of my friends were partying, I lived in New York City. And I do recall when most of my friends were partying, I was actually importing clothing from Hong Kong, our perfume from France, leather from Italy, and I did some work as well, some importing from Korea. So I guess I really was always trying to find ways to generate resources. I always felt, you know, that people had needs, and I really wanted to be there to provide a solution for them. And at a very young age, my uncle had a very successful multi-million-dollar business in New York. And he taught me a lot about business, and I learned about leadership, made lots of mistakes there learning to manage a team of over 20. And so I learned a lot about business and entrepreneurship in my early 20s.
So Victor, tell us, how did you come to Florida, and did you start off doing real estate?
I mean, great question. I was living in New York City, and it was winter. And we had lots and lots of snow in New York, maybe about 2 feet of snow. You're pretty much paralyzed. You can't move because your car can't move. The buses can't move. The trains will, you know, move, but you can't get to your car. You can't get to the train station. So I saw a commercial for Florida, Santiago, and the commercial they had for Florida, I saw a beautiful Florida. Guess what I saw? I saw sunshine, I saw palm trees, 10 miles visibility, blue skies, and white sandy beaches. And that's when I decided to move to Florida.
So tell us about your real estate business. You know, obviously here in South Florida, real estate is probably one of the biggest industries down here, especially now, because a lot of people are moving to Florida and South Florida specifically. Tell us, how did you start it?
Well, My wife and I were newlyweds. We've been married for about 15 years. Actually, for 15 years, and I'd say 4 months and about 3 days. And so we are very much into the real estate business. Well, she is very much into the real estate business. And when I met my wife, she had a real estate mortgage and a title company, and she's amazing and excellent at what she does. And when we got married, I got my license, which is about, you know, 15, 16 years ago. And we I was called and asked to do some work, some development work for some organizations. So in the meantime, while we're running our real estate business, I was doing some work for some contractors. For example, a very wealthy philanthropist asked me to help her to, build a team to raise $65 million to build a national monument. I was the executive director for that project. So my goal was to build a team and help raise $65 million. The good news is the project is completed. It is now a national monument. And another organization heard about the good work I did there. And they had a team that was doing about $6 million per year. And they wanted to go from $6 million to $8 million per year on their team. They asked me to come on board to do that. And Santiago, by the grace of God, we not just went from $6 to $8 million per year, we went to $14 million per year in revenues. And so after that project, my wife said, you're good at helping others grow their business. We've got a real estate business. Why don't we spend some time in building our business? So that's when I really finally got full time into our real estate business and transition. And since I've gotten involved, we've actually tripled our team and doubled our revenues, with our real estate. And this year, we're expecting to have an amazing year in real estate. So in real estate, we love doing that. And it's a purpose-driven strategy that we have in real estate. And what our strategy pretty much is that everyone has a passion in life. You, myself, whether it's business or personal, whether it's building a family, the location you live or the location you work can frustrate you or can inspire you. So real estate for us is an opportunity to find a location that helps you inspire your purpose, whatever that purpose may be.
Tell us a little bit about that purpose-driven strategy. And did you use that while working in the monument project?
Surely, absolutely. What's really, really important is when you're building a business or when you're putting together a team, and I think that monument stretched me a lot, Santiago. There is so much I wish I knew then that I have learned since then. But everything in life, nothing happens to us, it happens for us. Learning opportunity. And I think the greatest things I've learned since then is reading and trying to figure out what works best. I was able to implement some of those best things that I learned from that project into the following project, where we went from $6 million to $14 million per year. And one of the things that I've learned, how important it is to set vision and having your entire team on the same page regarding the vision and having them becoming stakeholders in that vision. And so the project really is identifying what is the vision, where's the end point, where are we trying to end up, and what are your skill sets that will fit into it? What is the kind of branding? What are the values that are important to us as a team as we work towards it? What are acceptable? What are not acceptable as far as our behavior or conduct, our work values or work ethics, our processes that we use, and what is working, what is not working, and fine-tuning those processes, learning how to handle the issues that comes up and in a quick manner and learning how to pivot, and learning also how to set goals and holding each other accountable towards those goals and being focused on those goals. Those are things, again, regarding purpose-driven, right? It's aligning all our resources, our human resources, our vision, and the needs of our customers. And in this case, the customers were veterans. We were trying to figure out how do we honor our veterans. We have lots of monuments in Washington, but none of those monuments honor those who are disabled. And it honors those who died in World War II, Vietnam War, Korean War, but it was not honoring those who were disabled. So again, it's helping people in everything that we did is making sure we're focused on who we are trying to honor in the monument and our processes, our meetings, our interaction, attending conventions, speaking to 5,000 to 10,000 people at conventions was normal. But in the process, we made sure that we knew what our purpose was, which is to honor the veterans. And we wanted to make sure that the resources coming into us, that we were good stewards of those resources as we redirect those resources as much as maximizing those towards building and completing the monument.
You touched on team building and leading teams. I know it could be a hassle at times, but like you were saying, just, you know, trying to communicate the vision. How was it to grow a team? How difficult was it? And how were you able to overcome difficult challenges with that?
You know, that's a really good question, Santiago. For anyone thinking about team building, one of the best books I'd recommend is by Jim Collins, Good to Great. That really influenced me a lot. And he talks about three things to look at. One, it's the right person, right? You have to make sure you have the right person. And the next thing is make sure that person, that they, whatever their skill set is, that skill set really is ideal for the task at hand. So the task at hand is making sure they're in the right seat, right? And I believe in all my heart there that everyone has greatness, and it's based on my faith. And there's a scripture that inspires me. It's Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10, which says, we are God's workmanship created unto good works, which God had purposed before the foundations of the earth. If you remember, we had talked about Zig Ziglar. Zig Ziglar, he said, the way he said it is, we're engineered for success, we are designed for accomplishment, and we are endowed with the seeds of greatness. So when we find the right person, I've always believed that there's no person that is wrong for the job. I've always feel the job is wrong for the person. And so if someone is not working out, I would never say that that person is wrong for the job. I would just say the job is wrong for that person, because we all have skill sets. So the key thing in one is finding the right person, is then finding the right seat. What is the job that is ideal for that person based on their skill set? And so the key thing is again, finding the right person, good recruiting. Two is finding out what their skill set is and finding out what tasks are best for that person. And the third thing is making sure that, no, we have the right person in the right seat. We then get on the bus together, which is what Jim Collins talks about, is how do we now create a vision now that we have the right team? How do we all create a vision, a unified vision, that we are all on the same page as to what we want to do and how we're going to get there? And I think for teams, once you have that, it's easier to deal through the other issues that comes along with working a team. Issues such as conflicts, right? If you really know you have the right person in the right seat and agree with the vision, then you really can trust, allow that person to share and disagree in a way that you can honor those disagreements. And I call them conflict, but they're really not conflicts. I feel they're clarifying moments where they can share and speak up and you can listen to them. That can only happen if you have trust. So if you have the right person in the right seat and is a part of the vision and they trust each other, we can then speak up, speak our mind, and disagree respectfully. But if we have trust, we can disagree. And if you can disagree, that means you can have healthy conflicts, and then you can fine tune and correct as you go. And everyone is speaking up. Everyone is taking ownership. As a result, we can then address issues in a quick way, and then we can actually have results.
That's something, there's a few points that I got from that, you know, designating a person to what's best to their skill set. You know, when one user is good with technology because he's very good technically, or a person that's good in communication, you know, put them in the public relations part of your company.
Yeah,
you know, this is hypothetically, but very important. And also going through disagreements, but the person could disagree, but also has that trust. Hey, I disagree with him, but I trust his vision,
right,
and I trust his path. How often, how important is communication to communicate with a team? Should it be done weekly? Should it be done monthly or maybe yearly?
I'd say weekly would be very, very important. And here's why. Because issues in your business, you're constantly having issues. Every single day you're having issues. And you have to deal with those issues in a very, very timely manner. And Einstein once had one of his quotes is, 97% of his time is not spent on a solution. 97% of the time is focused on the problem, right? So it's really, really important if you and your team or your organization, if you have issues, that you come together and you talk about them. You spend a lot of time trying to figure out what it is. Because a lot of times in business, we solve the symptoms, but not the problem. And if you take the time to really communicate and have open discussions, open conflicts, open dialogues, you really will get to the root of the problem, and you may realize it's a process issue that needs to be changed. Not necessarily a person issue, but a process issue. And if you fix that process issue, if you don't fix it, the problem will permeate. You'll lose customers, you lose profits. But if you are able to take the time to have open communications and be honest and look at the processes, I think you can actually get to discussing those issues, solving those issues, and coming up with solutions. And that comes through communication. And I think it's really, really important in trust that you're always thinking about trust, because whether it's your customers and, hey, if you made a mistake, own it and correct it as quickly as you can. And so I'd say, yes, having frequent meetings is really, really important. One, because once you identify what the problem is and you've solved it, you then have a task, and that task is assigned to someone. And then you have to meet frequently to see whether or not that person is addressing the task. And if they're having problems, you communicate again what challenges they're having, what support they need, so that you can continue to move the process and your organization or your vision forward in a quality way.
Besides real estate, Victor has done coaching, and specifically executive coaching. Tell us about that and how'd you get into it?
I got into it because by nature, I really care about people's vision. One of the greatest things in my life, Santiago, is as I said to you before, it's my core passion. I believe that we have so many people walking around that are not happy in what they're doing. They choose careers based on income. They choose careers based on how much money they can make from that. Well, I would say for the most part, I think we've got it all wrong. I think the most part, we're wired differently. And I think most people are not necessarily happy in their careers. Here's what I recommend. Find a need out there that you really, really, see out there, something that is constantly bothering you that you feel you need to solve, right? I say become passionate about it, right? And if your skill sets are aligned to it, you will make money. I guarantee that you will. One, because two things. Because, you know, there's a saying about quicksand. And if I can give an analogy between a quicksand and a wellspring. A wellspring is a place you get really, really energized, okay? And a quicksand, you step in your quicksand, you sink. A lot of people are working and they're feeling frustrated. They're in a quicksand. Why? They're making the money, but it's really not what they're wired to do. And so wellspring is really when you're wired to do it, you're solving something that you're passionate about. It's no longer work. And because you're good at it, you're wired for it, your demand is going to grow because your quality is going to exceed others. So coaching for me is a way to help individuals identify, one, their purpose, their big picture vision, right? I call that, it's like going out boating. If you ever gone out boating, it's really important that you know that if you're out there in the middle of the ocean or you want to go to a sand barge and you anchor and you leave your boat, if you don't put an anchor in, what happens to your boat?
It floats away.
It floats away. But if you put an anchor down, right, it doesn't matter if the boat drifts maybe 10 feet or not. It always comes back to where it's anchored. So coaching for me is to help individuals find out what is your anchor, and then help to build a life around that anchor, a life based on purpose, a life based on a wellspring where they will not be just working, but they'll be doing something that they love. And it will show in their lives, their quality of life improves, the quality of relationship improves, their financial situation improves, and you can't beat that. That you can't buy with money.
What is the most common problem or issue you see from your clients when you first begin with them?
I would say, one, I think most people have dreams, but I think they have limiting beliefs, limiting things, four things that inhibit them. Whatever your goal is in life, I think there are four things that typically hold people back. It's called GALES. And in coaching, we call them GALES. The G stands for gremlins. It's a voice that is telling you that you're not good enough. It never tells you that you're not good enough, Santiago, but that voice is telling you that every challenge that you have, it gives you an excuse not to do it. You procrastinate, or you want to get another degree, or you want to read some more, or you want to do some more. All it's really saying, if you look at your activities is confirming a voice that is telling you that you're not good enough, if you know what I'm saying, right? So you, the excuses that you make, right, is more procrastinating, but deep inside, it is coming from a place and a voice that's telling you that you're not good enough. Now, that voice, believe it or not, means well for you. For example, you're going to do a public speaking, and in that public speaking, you're afraid to do the public speaking because that voice, that gremlin is telling you, do you remember when you were in first grade or second grade or elementary and you spoke to the class and they laughed at you? That gremlin is really saying, is trying to protect you by saying, hey, they're going to laugh at you again. So be careful. So you have that fear-based decision making in whether you want to move forward. And that gremlin is there to hold you back. And so that's one of the things that hold people back. The other one is what I call A, which is assumptions that we make. We see a situation, we see an opportunity, but we make an assumption. Well, in the past, we tried to do it, it didn't work, so therefore we assume that it's not going to happen again, right? But in the past, we may have learned from it, and this time we may be better off to move forward. So the A would be the assumptions we make about opportunities or the assumptions we make about people that we're meeting, and those things can hold us from moving forward. The other is I, which is interpretation, how we interpret things. You meet someone and they don't look you in the eye, so you think they don't trust you. Or you feel that because they don't shake your hand firm enough, right, they really don't want to hire you. Well, you know, here's one lesson that I learned many years ago. I was hiring someone, and the person I was hiring was a rock star, but she would not look me directly in the eye. And she became and I hired someone else. I learned later, because of her background and her culture, you don't look someone in authority in the eye. Well, that person turned out to be an amazing superstar and worked for someone else and became a leader in her own right. She eventually ran her own company and she did well, right? Here's what I learned from that, right? I interpreted the eye-to-eye contact as being a lack of trust, but it wasn't. It was a cultural issue. The other L would be limiting beliefs. Is limiting beliefs we make. Well, you know, limiting beliefs is, well, I'm a woman, therefore I'm not going to achieve it, right? They don't give these opportunities to women. Yes, women are amazing leaders. They're doing great things. And some, you know, we wish we have more women leaders around that can do, they're doing amazing things, and they bring unique perspectives and drives to organization. And so limiting beliefs, saying, for example, I'm a certain culture or whatever those limitations are, or I don't have a degree. Well, you know, look at, you've got so many people out there that don't have degrees, but they hire people with degrees to work for them. You know, you have so many college dropouts that became billionaires. Bill Gates is one. Of course, the guy is he's a nerd, but he's an amazing nerd, right? So the point being, in coaching, those are things that we try to work on, and not just setting goals, but realize what is holding you back from being achieving the greatness that you already have inside of you. And we work through some of those gales.
What advice would you give to future entrepreneurs who want to get into starting a new business?
That's a really, really good question. And here's what I'd recommend. Okay. First of all, you know, the foundation is really, really important. If you're starting a business, it's really, really important that you know what your foundation is. If not, if the foundation is weak, it is not going to last. Most businesses fail within the first 3 to 5 years. I think maybe 90% of those fail. So it's really, really important. There's so many things that you have to do. You have to know what your product, your services, your capabilities, what kinds of revenues that you want, where's your market, who's your target audience, who are you going to partner with, what is your personal strength, what kind of infrastructure that you want to put in place for yourself. And so, you know, in doing that, I would say it's really, really important that you know that most businesses start with lots and lots of ideas, Santiago, but it's really important that you take those multiple ideas and you narrow them down, and you take your raw ideas and you write them down, all your ideas, you write them down, and then you think through them. The next one is you look at which one really is in line with your, again, we talked about it, your anchor. It's really important what you know what your anchor is, first of all. And that I'd say that's the most important thing. Find out where your anchor is. And I help that with a vision board, and we do workshops on creating your anchor. Once you have your anchor and knowing what your core values are, you then look at your ideas and then you align that with your core values, with your anchor, where you want to be, right? What resources that you have, what is your top priorities in life? And once you do that, I would say then they're pretty much some things that I'd strongly recommend that you put together in creating your big picture vision. And what I'd say that there are 8 things that I'd recommend that you do in creating yourself, your work as an entrepreneur. One is your vision and your purpose, right? Your vision, your purpose is really, really important. And that would be the most important thing, your big picture anchor. Then you're looking at what is a problem that you see out there. And I call them pains. What are the pains, right, that are out there that your customers are having? And what is your pain killer? What is the solution that you offer, right? So the first and most important is your vision and your purpose. The second would be the problems, identifying with the problems and the pains out there that you're trying to solve. The third issue was, what is the solution that you're bringing? What is the painkiller that you're bringing? The fourth would be, who are the customers and knowing who they are, right? And then the next one would be the channels. The channels would be pretty much where would you get your message out, right? You know, are you going to do that through funnel, through media, social media? Are you going to open a store? How are you going to get to your customers? And how are your customers going to get to you? The other, that would be your fifth item. The sixth one would be metrics. How do you measure your success? What are the goals that you're going to set? How do you know that you're achieving your goals? And you really, really have to measure those every month, every week, every day, and your activities that leads towards your success. And the next item, which would be your seventh item, would be what makes you unique. What are your skill sets that you bring to the table that no one else have? Name 3 of those unique things about you, right, that no one else has, and that makes you very, very different from everyone else. And I'll say, try to make sure you know what those things are. Your unique situation would be, why are you different? Why should someone buy from you, right? What value do you deliver to your customers? And that's really, really important. And then last but not least, I would say, is your revenue streams. How much will your customers pay for you to solve their pain? And what is your cost to produce that? And what are your margins? And keep in mind, your profits is not how much you pay yourself. That's your revenue. Make sure that your expense and your cost that you pay yourself is a part of your cost. And then at the end, your profits is separate from what you pay yourself. So I would say that would be my advice to anyone starting a business, to have those things in place. And again, two important things I'd say. It's really important that you understand the difference between being an entrepreneur, right? I'd say being an entrepreneur and having a business, right? You can be an entrepreneur and you can have a business. The biggest difference really is an entrepreneur typically works for themselves, right? A business, you don't need to be there. You create a system that you can take your vacation 1 or 2 weeks, but running a business is creating a process that you don't have to be there, but you have processes and systems in place that you don't have to be there. If you have to be there every day, or if you go on vacation and it stops, you're not running a business. You're just simply, you have a job, to be quite frank. And it's really, really important that you understand the difference. You start out, yes, having a job, being an entrepreneur, but ultimately your goal is to move away from that into running a business. And that's where coaching gets in, where it helps you to create the anchor, and it gets you to moving away from having a job as an entrepreneur to having a business as an entrepreneur.
Random question. Do you sing like your son, Vaughn?
I would say that he took it all, you know, people say that, you know, the good old saying, he took it all away from me. I have nothing left. All right, when I sing, I've been in churches where they've asked me to sing solo. I was really impressed, but they actually said solo that no one can hear. So and I've also I've been in churches where they've actually paid me to sing tenor, 10 or so miles away from the church. So when I'm around Vaughn, he really does not want me to sing. One of the tips that he gave me, he says, Dad, he says, one of the things about singing is not just your voice, but but you have to have good hearing, and you can hear different tones. I'm tone deaf. So most people with tone deaf don't realize that their singing is awful. So if you're tone deaf, please sing in the shower. Keep away from muted musicians because we irritate them.
We'll leave the music and the singing to Von Biggs.
Absolutely.
Victor, what is the best way to reach you?
If they want to reach me, certainly. Our real estate website certainly is exclusively reforrealestate.com. And anyone can reach me certainly there. I'd love for you to go on my LinkedIn, Victor Biggs, or Facebook or Instagram, Victor Biggs. Like me there. That's good ways to reach me. Or 954-237-4892. Those are good ways to reach me as well.
Love how you mentioned your phone number. The old-fashioned way is probably the best.
There you go.
Well, this was a very encouraging podcast, really reminding me like the basics, knowing where your anchor is, communicating, and also trying to minimize like your focus when you start your business is very important. And of course, Zig Ziglar. You can't go wrong with Zig, he definitely has brought up a lot of points that is seeking multi-generational. So really, really encouraging. And Victor, really encouraging to having you. And I appreciate you coming on to the Sleon Productions podcast. And any closing words before we head off?
Santiago, I just say one, you're doing some amazing things. And if anyone hasn't tried your business development services, I'd say I encourage them to try your services. You do business work. You work with small and medium business. You do a lot as it relates to technology. And so I'd say if anyone on the line is looking for someone to help them do that, connect with Santiago Leon as well. He does provide some good services. Again, I'll say to everyone out there that listened to us today, I just wish that you have an amazingly fantastic life. And just remember, live a life on purpose and you will have a more purposely, amazingly fantastic life.
Victor Biggs, I appreciate you coming on to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Nice to have you.